Welcome to the Wallbender Show. Thanks for joining us today. This is the intersection of faith and culture. That means we actually allow our faith to influence the culture around us. Imagine that, actually treating your neighbor the way you want to be treated. What a concept. I wonder where I've heard that before. Yeah, biblical idea, right? Christian idea. Actually, being a Christian influence in the culture is good for everybody. Because if we once again had a culture where everybody was treating their neighbor the way they want to be treated, imagine how our justice system would look. Imagine what our business transactions would be like. Imagine how much more you would trust the person you take your car to or your have work on your house or whatever it might be. Let's get back to those biblical values. That's what we're all about here at Wall Builders, rebuilding those foundational principles that make a great, wonderful place to live. Then, in other words, create a society where you want to raise your kids and your grandkids. We have everything we need to be able to do that. It's just a matter of us using the tools that God gave us and actually participating in the process. That's what we do here at Wall Builders. We're glad you're a part of it. Thanks for coming alongside us. I'm Rick Green, America's Constitution Coach, here with David Barton and Tim Barton. David's America's premier historian and our founder at Wall Builders. Tim's a national speaker and pastor and president of Wall Builders. All right, David and Tim, got coming up a little later, Dr. Mary Talley Bowden. We've never had her on the program before, but she has been a stalwart leader during the COVID chaos for doctors to be able to prescribe things like ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, budesonide, all those things that the doctors that were actually practicing medicine and not just following the demands of the FDA and the Center for Demented Confusion, better known as the CDC. And so she's been on the front lines of that. And you remember, guys, whenever we got all the posts from the FDA saying, you're not a horse, don't use ivermectin for COVID. And they basically tried to intimidate everybody into not using what people like Joe Rogan and others were having great success with. And not that it was a silver bullet, right? It didn't work for everybody, but it was working for a lot of people. And they didn't want anybody doing it because, as we've talked about on the program, if you talked about it or people knew there was any other treatment, that cut a hole right through the emergency authorization statutes so they couldn't push the vaccines out with if there were other treatments. And so it was all part of their kind of legal wrangling in manipulating the message. Well, thankfully, there because of Dr. Bowden, who's going to be on in a few minutes, and other doctors, they finally got a lawsuit at after the FDA to try to take down some of these most egregious claims, like ivermectin absolutely does not work for COVID. You're not a horse. Don't do it. That type of stuff. And so apparently, the FDA finally just gave in and withdrew a lot of those most outlandish statements. And wouldn't happen without Dr. Bowden. So it's going to be great to have her on. But man, I've talked to so many medical professionals like her that just cannot believe that their entire profession really just bowed to all of this stuff from the FDA and the CDC and did not continue to ask questions and to literally practice medicine.
You know, one of the things that's really been amazing to me, and I guess we've talked about some of this before, and that the problem with the federal courts is it takes 2 or 3 years to get something done. And so when you're in the middle of COVID and they're shutting down churches like crazy, it took a year and a half to get those cases through the court and get them up where they could really do something with it. And so it takes a while to work the system. And I've been really, really pleased with a number of now genuine academic studies that have been done earlier, but they've come out in the last couple of years that just shoot down. I mean, medically shoot down the CDC's position. And they were in something that they admit had never happened before. So how can they be the experts on something that's never happened before and tell you everything about it and tell you what you can and can't do?
And with that, is that a rhetorical question? Because we know how Dr. Fauci is the science. So that's that's how.
Oh, I forgot the wizard behind the curtain. I forget. Yeah,
it's hey, come on, guys. If you're going to refer to him, you got to refer to him correctly. It's Pope Fauci. It's Pope Fauci of the COVID religion. And you must
of COVID kneel. But you can't use Pope. Yeah. That's a Christian term. You can't use Pope. You got to find something different.
Maybe it's high priest or high. Anyway, you get the point. Okay, go ahead, man.
But there's now all this great information out. And so the lawsuit connected with all the new studies that have come out proving the points that were being made back then. Three and a half, four years ago, it's just really good and good for her for having the courage to take it on and get in the court with it. Because as you said, Rick, the FDA has finally pulled this stuff down. They didn't want to have the lawsuit where they'd have to go into court, actually have to put up their proof and in a court of law, have a jury decide what the truth is. They would look really bad if it got into that point. So the good news is that a lot of that bad advice has now been taken down off the government website.
And, you know, I think a lot of the stuff you're talking about, David, that's happened recently would not have happened if it hadn't been for Elon Musk buying Twitter so that we could once again see, you know, and have a lot of free debate there on Twitter. Joe Rogan interviewing Peter McCullough and Robert Malone and all those guys. I mean, there was some really important inflection points throughout this whole thing that finally freed up the debate, which, you know, used to be something we were really proud of in the U.S. Freedom of debate, freedom of discussion, all of those things that even if somebody disagrees or we think somebody's, you know, a wacko for saying whatever they're saying, it's important to have that ability to sharpen each other in that way. And so, you know, very thankful for some of those big moments like has been mentioned. But let's talk to Dr. Bowden and find out what happened with this, not only with this case, but what it's been like for her treating COVID patients and literally having, you know, her colleagues in the pharmacy industry and in the medical industry not allow her to do what she thinks is best as a physician as she's dealing with those situations. We'll be right back. You're listening to The Wallbuilder Show.
This is Tim Barton from Wallbuilders with another moment from American history. As the American War for Independence began, the president of Yale was the Reverend Naftali Daggett. When New Haven, the home of Yale, came under attack, about 100 citizens rushed out to meet the British. The Reverend Daggett galloped by them on horseback, his clerical robes flowing behind him in the wind, and he took up a solitary position atop a hill. The 2,500 British soon put the townsfolk to flight, but the Reverend Daggett continued to stand alone, firing down on the advancing troops. A British officer confronted him. "What are you doing there, you old fool? If I let you go, will you ever fire again on the troops of His Majesty?" "Nothing more likely," was the preacher's reply. America's early pastors personally confronted danger and courageously led their communities. For more information on Pastor Daggett and other colonial patriots, go to wallbuilders.com.
Welcome back to Wallbuilders. Thanks for staying with us. Dr. Mary Talley Bowden with us. And Dr. Bowden, you have no idea who I am, but I've been following you on social media throughout all this COVID insanity, and you have been a wonderful voice of reason. Thank you for leading the charge in the medical community for sanity, for actually restoring some sanity to the medical community. So with that setup, welcome to the Wallbuilders program. Thank you for joining me today.
Thanks so much for having me, Rick.
Well, you've been fighting this whole thing for years, and finally, the FDA has been forced to at least remove some of their absurd statements about ivermectin. But before we even get to that victory and what that might mean, just kind of walk us through the frustration level when you're actually treating COVID patients on the ground. You're dealing with it day in and day out, and you're actually, you know, practicing medicine. You're trying different things, seeing what works, what doesn't work. There's no silver bullet, but when you find that something works and you cannot even get pharmacies to prescribe it, what is that like for a doctor that's trying to help patients?
It's highly frustrating. And prior to COVID, I'd never encountered anything like this. I've never had a pharmacist deny a prescription for anything I've written. Yeah, unless there's an allergy or some sort of interaction, but not just flat out refuse because there's an agenda, right? It's agenda driven. So it's very frustrating. And, you know, even yesterday I had a pharmacist deny my prescription. So we've won this lawsuit, but we just have a lot of propaganda to counteract, 3 years of misinformation. We really need to keep talking about it and re-educating the public.
When you say re-education, I mean, it really is, because the lies about what works and what doesn't work and the misinformation and different opinions is fine. Like, I wouldn't call it a lie if somebody just disagreed about whether or not a certain treatment was worth, you know, attempting or trying or whatever. That's one thing. But when they absolutely emphatically mock you as a medical professional or an individual, I mean, look at what they did to Joe Rogan over this. When they mock you and do the things that they did, It does become a lie, because it causes people to completely avoid the treatment or even to do their own homework. I mean, that too has got to have been a real battle. I can't even imagine how many times you might have told a patient, you know, "Hey, try this." And they're like, "Oh, no, that's only for horses," or whatever. I mean, how did you deal with that on a daily basis?
Well, you know, as my notoriety spread, I basically, most of the patients that came to me came because they, you know, knew my thoughts on the subject. Initially, yes, I did have to convince, or occasionally what would happen is that patients, and they'd want their family members to take the ivermectin, and then there'd be some back and forth on that. The patients were less of a problem than the pharmacists, and it just it's a repeated issue. And I have my list. I have my go-to pharmacies. The problem is usually they're not open on Sundays. Occasionally they're not open on Saturdays. They don't take insurance. Yeah, a pill that costs 2 cents in Africa is now $4 a pill. And it could be hundreds of dollars for a course of treatment for COVID. And then the hospitals, they're flat out denying it. People are trying to sneak ivermectin into the hospitals or suing the hospitals. And even the court system is saying, the line on this FDA misinformation to justify denying patients their right to try ivermectin.
I had my dad got, COVID and had a really bad case and nearly died. And the doctor that really helped him, and I can't remember now because it was 2-3 years ago, if it was hydroxychloroquine or ivermectin. It was one of the two, but she couldn't get the pharmacist to prescribe it for him. And so she's literally nursing him back to health, and she weighs like 90 pounds. And I'm not going to name her because I don't want anybody to go after her, but she literally like physically told this pharmacist, I'm going to slam you again. Which she did kind of slam me against the wall. Basically said, I'm the doctor, you're the pharmacist. Why are you not?
Right.
And she ends up saving my dad's life. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind. And, but I couldn't believe, and that's in Texas. I could not believe, and you're in Texas. It's like, we're in the land, it's supposed to be the land of the free, and our doctors are not allowed to have the freedom to recommend these things, to prescribe these things. It's the height of insanity. And, I could go on and on and on about why I think the FDA is an unconstitutional agency in the first place. And because they do these things at the national level, we don't have the competition between state agencies and state practices and that sort of thing, and it takes away that laboratory of freedom that the founders talked about. So that's mostly another topic, but it definitely played itself out here where you had this one size fits all coming from a national narrative that turned out to be wrong in many, many, many of these cases. So walk us through now with the FDA, this lawsuit, what exactly was the victory, and what exactly has changed with the FDA's, at least maybe not behavior, but their statements.
Yeah, we filed it in November of 2022, so it's been a battle. And initially, the case was dismissed based on the concept of sovereign immunity, which basically means that the government is doing what they are designed to do with their authority, they're authorized to do, then you can't sue them. So the case was dismissed, but then we appealed and we won that. Then the case was challenged again on standing, and we got through that. And so at that point, the FDA, I guess, knew they were going to lose, and they wanted to settle, and they were basically giving up what we wanted in the first place, which was to take down these social media posts that were unlawfully directing the public not to take ivermectin for COVID and interfering with the doctor-patient relationship. And as you said, it's a national agency. Their job is to approve medications for human use. Their job is not to tell patients what to take for certain diseases and not to tell doctors how to prescribe certain medications. So we've gotten their misinformation removed online, but it's also set a very important precedent. And going forward, it should hamper them from trying something like this again.
How bad is their reputation now in the medical community? Because I don't hear enough doctors saying what you've been willing to say and to take them on this. I would have thought they would have lost all credibility through this thing. I mean, the 6-foot thing being made up on the spot, all of the ridiculous things they did. Dr. Birx going on television trying to get people to wear goggles. I would think people would, whatever they say at this point, you just don't even listen to it. But apparently most of the medical community, which are smart people, right? I mean, I don't know, maybe you have a different story on whether or not the medical community is smart people, but has their reputation not been hurt?
Yeah, I guess it depends on who you ask, but you have to think about this. We've had 3 years of very strong, powerful propaganda thrown at us.
Yeah.
And the they invested over $11 billion in the PR campaign to combat vaccine hesitancy. That's a lot of money.
Wow.
A lot of people. We have a lot to overcome. So I think a lot of people are frustrated. Okay, we won this lawsuit. Now what? But it's not the end of the war. It's a turning point, but we need to keep talking about it. And like I said, re-educate people. We're moving the needle. It just takes a long time.
Yeah. Yeah, you raise such an important point, because the psychological effect, if you're only hearing one side and you're not hearing the other side, or the other side is definitely, mocked for even their positions. I had to make myself start being more forgiving. I know I should do that as a Christian anyway, right? But I had to be like, instead of immediately seeing somebody, whether it was the mask or whatever, and thinking, wow, you failed the IQ test, I had to start saying, wait a minute, pray for them. They're probably only getting one side of the story. And so what you said right there is very, very correct. I don't know, Dr. Bowden, how much you're into history, but Patrick Henry, when he started his Give Me Liberty or Give Me Death speech, he said, according to the magnitude of the subject, ought to be the freedom of the debate. Only in this way can we arrive at the truth. That just kept coming back to me throughout this whole thing, because the subject is, it's huge. It's our lives, and it's literally shutting down Earth. I mean, that's a big subject, and yet there was no freedom of the debate. And so we didn't find truth for the longest time. And even now, as you just pointed out, it's only in pockets where the truth has been allowed to, you've been allowed to try different things and have the debate and arrive at the truth. And what I hear you saying is, be hopeful. Listen, it was a long fight, but when we stay in the fight and we keep speaking truth, we can win people over.
Yeah, I could not agree more about the lack of debate. And it's just mind-boggling to me, because that's, when I was in my training, there was lots of debate. It was very heated. We'd have these weekly, for example, tumor board meetings where you talk about what's the best approach to treat a patient with this type of cancer. And it was very intellectual and back and forth. And that's what I was used to. And they just shut that down. We had these government experts that were not laying hands on people, that were strategizing from the safety of their homes over Zoom calls, telling, who can get treated and how. It's just unbelievable. And then, all debate was just shut down. Never seen anything like it.
Yeah. And I can't remember the name. So I remember Walensky. Of course, she, in my opinion, should be on trial for the things she told pregnant women would be just perfectly fine and safe. But the other lady that took her place, she was a state health director, and there's video of her laughing about the fact that they were making this
Nancy
stuff
Cohen.
Up. Yeah. They're literally laughing about making this stuff up on the spot.
Yeah.
Going, these are the professionals.
Yeah.
It's insane. Well, I thank God for you. I mean that. I literally thank God for voices like yours that were willing to stand up. There were so few. It was like, what did the forget the guy's name from California? He called it Team Sanity or something like that. And it was just, it was rough, man. It was rough. And so at least now we're getting more freedom of speech, and we're able to get out there. And we're not, thank you, Elon Musk. I mean, did you get canceled? I wonder about that. Did you get shut down at all?
5 months I was banned.
Oh,
and he restored me on Christmas Day.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Well, Merry Christmas. Of us, because your voice has been important. And is there any kind of an association or anything that has been put together with you and other doctors that stayed sane and wanted to have another outlet? I mean, I wonder if that's one of the next steps.
Well, there are lots of little groups.
I saw the frontline doctors.
Like-minded,
and, yeah.
But, there's some infighting, of course, and there's not one huge group.
Yeah.
I started something called Coalition for Health Freedom, trying to merge all these groups together. But that got overwhelming. I formed a 501c4 called Americans for Health Freedom. And that's trying to get politicians together. So I'm trying to get politicians to call for the shots to be pulled off the market.
Good.
And
I've been
that's
watching
all they have
that.
To do. Yeah, and so that's growing. But
you've actually got a ticker tape almost, right? How many have done it? Yeah. Well, if it's any consolation, in the world of on the conservative side of the political realm, it's always harder to get self-governing, independent people to come together, right? The other side, it's much easier because they lockstep.
Exactly.
It's that communist mindset of everybody just does the same thing. So it's always harder to get our team together. So keep at it. and we will gladly be a bullhorn for you. So anytime you want your voice to be heard, please call me, reach out. We'd love to have you back.
Thank you. I'd love that.
Well, thanks again for your boldness, and thanks for helping to keep us sane, and for all the patients that have been saved because you were willing to speak truth and live that out. Dr. Mary Talley Bowden, and you should follow her on and now on Twitter. Thank you, Elon Musk. Appreciate you, or X, I guess I should be saying. Stay with us, folks. We'll be right back with David and Tim Barton.
Hey guys, it's Tim Barton, and I want to tell you about our new book, The American Story, Building the Republic. We start with George Washington as president, and we've already become a nation, so really now it's how do we function as a nation? And if we look back in American history, the stability, the prosperity, success we enjoyed as Americans is because of the foundation that our early presidents laid, because of the examples they set. How do we live in America under the Constitution? What is the role of the federal government? And really, what part did each one of these early presidents play? We go through the first seven presidents, and a lot of people probably know the names Washington, Adams, Jefferson, and Madison. Very few people know about Monroe or John Quincy Adams or Andrew Jackson. Now, we might know some of their names. We really don't know their stories. We want you to relearn, rediscover American history, and see how it applies to today. Go to wallbuilders.com and get your copy of The American Story, Building the Republic.
Welcome back to Wall Builders. Thanks for staying with us. Thanks to Dr. Bowden for joining us as well, and for her courage in standing up for truth and for her patience. And frankly, not for the science, as Tim pointed out earlier, since that would refer to Fauci. He's the science, but standing up for actual science, you know, actually questioning things and continuing to question them.
But it boggles my mind that to this day, she's still having problems with pharmacists.
Yeah.
Like, okay, I didn't know pharmacists had the option to say, I'm not going to fill this prescription because I disagree with your medical perspective.
Yeah.
I mean, guys, yeah. Genuinely, this is mind-boggling to me because obviously pharmacists, they went to medical school too on some level, right? But they're practicing a different kind of medicine, and really there's this drug formulation and maybe measuring how drugs might interact with each other. And so even as Dr. Bowden pointed out, if there might be something that could cause a negative reaction with a drug, then a pharmacist might speak up. But for the pharmacist to say that I am not going to fill a prescription because I don't like ivermectin, again, like I'm
it's
having
crazy,
a hard
man.
Time wrapping my head
and
around that.
And I could
that.
See a pharmacist saying to the customer, hey, I think you ought to beware of this or that, right? Okay, fine. I can live with that and then let the customer say I'm going with my doctor's advice. But they would literally refuse to the doctor's face.
Right. And you know, Rick, to your point, if for those who have picked up medication, you know, anytime in the last several months that you might remember, one of the things that often when you purchase the medicine, there's a little button on the keypad, right? Do you want to get physician's advice on this? And you have to choose. Do I want to have some guidance on this? And so to your point, it would absolutely, in my mind, make sense if a pharmacist is like, hey, just so you know, I don't think this is very effective. You can try it. If it doesn't work, come back. You know, we can try to find you some alternates. You can let the doctor know. But to not fill a prescription, and you know, Rick, I had forgotten about your story with your dad, even as you were going through that. And this is just a little bit that we know, and recognizing there's a lot we don't know. But Dad, as you pointed out early on, with the available data that is there now, showing that even though ivermectin is not the silver bullet, Rick, as you mentioned, but it can be effective and has been effective for some people, for pharmacists not to prescribe or not to fill what a doctor prescribed, that the data does show has been effective in some cases, is, again, just mind-boggling to me.
The other thing that really struck me was I had no clue that we spent $11 billion trying to make people feel comfortable with untested medical procedures. I mean, this is early on before we knew anything about COVID. Nobody done testing on it yet. It was brand new out of the Wuhan lab. We didn't know it. And we spent $11 billion to make people feel comfortable with it. Are you kidding me? I mean, we can use that elsewhere. They shouldn't have been spending it anyway, but that's just amazing, the propaganda use that they put with that money.
Well, and you know, Dad, to this point, we have never been anti-vaccination people, generally speaking. But since COVID, I am questioning all vaccines now, right? We're like, wait a second. Pfizer made how much money? So like, is it possible that some of these companies are in it for the money, not because there's actually medical benefit to this? Like, I'm having to question so much right now. And I say that to point out where when you have people doing very corrupt things for very selfish reasons and motivations, it can bring a lot of harm and damage to other areas and other other perspectives in that industry as well. So I'm so grateful for Dr. Bowden for all she's doing, trying to help and make a difference, and grateful for so many of those doctors out there who are still fighting back against this nonsense, and really glad that some of these things in the FDA are coming down after all the nonsense has been up for so long.
Yeah, I got to say, guys, as we sign off, I would love to know, and maybe someday we'll actually get good data, how much total was spent, not only on the propaganda, on the actual development of the vaccines, right? Because we paid for that too with all the warp speed stuff. Everything was paid for by us, the taxpayers. So we paid for their product to be developed. We paid for it to be marketed. We paid for it to be distributed. How many lives were saved as a result or cost? And then when you look at overall all-cause mortality, how much worse was it during the worst parts of COVID than a regular flu year versus how much more all-cause mortality once the vaccines were introduced? I'm just asking questions, but I would love to have data on all of that at some point. And then what did it cost us to shut down the economy and shut down the world? Good questions to ask. We'll see if we can ever actually get real answers to any of them. But it's a great reminder that the federal government does not have all the answers and shouldn't even be doing a lot of the things that it's doing. Had we had 50 states doing different things, we could have learned from each other instead of the one size fits all, which is what the founders wanted us to stay away from. All right, out of time for today, folks. Thanks for joining us. You've been listening to The Wall Builder Show.